Well, welcome. Yeah, welcome. So this is our third and last session, obviously, on systems thinking, faith, and adaptation. And what we really want to focus on now is just what does a church do with all of this? Anyway, I think I know everybody, but Steve Jensen and...
Shirley Jensen?
Yeah. And
Shirley Feldman.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a child of the 70s, so hyphenated last name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How many were not here earlier this week?
Okay.
Well, so we'll do a brief recap. So this is a session three. The first session, we were understanding the complex risks that humanity faces. Session two, we're looking at entry points and systems and governance processes that could help us. And so today we're envisioning the church's role. So our objectives for today are to just review those key points and why we've covered those, discuss the wider role of risk management. That was a request. And to envision the entry points and role for the church and how we can better build our community resilience of the communities we live and work in. And then identify the barriers that we can work to overcome together.
Oh, let's go with prayer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now that we have our...
Yeah. So with those things in mind, let's just start with prayer if we could.
Maybe I should put that back so we can pray about this.
Yeah. And so this is things that we're up to today, but this is really a workshop. We've done a lot of teaching, but a lot of interacting and working through together what a lot of this material looks like. But today we want to focus really on what do we do with this as a church and as people of faith across all faiths. What do we do with this? How do we bring this down and find our role in faith communities and how we work to bring about more resilient communities and really push this idea. We talked about it last night, Cornel West's quote, that justice is what love looks like in public. Of course, we're talking about the unity of love, but I think this is really an expression of love. What can we do as communities of faith in the communities we're embedded in? And how do we bring about more resilient societies, knowing there's a lot of problems coming up? So we're going to just be working through a lot of that today. This is a blind leading the blind here today, so sorry about that, but we just need to work it out together.
We're not really blind.
We're not really blind.
We have our blueprint.
Yeah. And you have a whole lot of experience working in this field. You guys have been doing this for a long time and given substance to it. So we're going to learn from each other and see what we can build for the future. Anyway, let's pray here. Yeah. Lord, we ask you to be with us. We ask you to... visit us with your spirit, Lord, and inspire us. You know the things that are in front of us on this planet. You know where we've fallen short. You know where we're strong. And you know what we need to be building into. So, Lord, we just ask you would inspire us. You would give us unique insights into the world that you want to create, our role, and that you would give us strength that we may leave from here with new ideas about things we could build in our communities and the power and the authority to do that. And may it be to your glory and may justice and mercy just reign across this planet. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. So, brief, short review. So you can, brief and short, redundant. Sorry. So just to recap, especially for those of you who missed earlier parts of the week, globally we're seeing, and locally we're seeing elevated disasters, risks, trends, and this is a global distribution trend at one point in time. So while we are seeing increased of frequency and severity of disasters, you see there's only one dot representing in the United States, and even though we know how many things are happening in our own society, it is multiplied across the four portions of the globe.
This is just a snapshot from a few months ago, one day, the things that were going on around the planet.
Wow.
Yeah. has taken off a UN website if you're ever interested in looking at it. It's reliefweb.int. But give you a good picture of what's going on day to day around the planet.
And the size of the dots is the seriousness of the disaster?
Exactly. Yeah. The size means it's greater magnitude.
Yeah. One thing, just as long as that's up, we see a lot of very major things, you know, in the Philippines right there, you know, hitting a typhoon. But so we talk about those as the intensive disasters, but we see extensive disasters, smaller, but lots of them. And that's really where the big work is right now.
We also talked about the uncertainty of our changing world and how the changes in the natural or physical environment are occurring, in our built environment, and our social environments. All these environments, incredible changes are taking place and changing rapidly. But they not only are doing that in those environments, these environments are interacting with each other. The natural and the physical and the social environments are interacting. So, for example, if we took wildfire in California and our ill forests that are dying and they're dry, and we've had 8 years of drought, and so we get massive fires. How does that interact with the wildland-urban interface where people are now living where they didn't used to live? And how does that interact with some of our isolation or vulnerable populations that we've allowed to occur? And those three environments interacting, can the interactive part elevates the risk, and it also elevates the severity of an event.
We teach around this a lot, and people come into our classes talking about natural disasters, and we forbid them from using those terms together, because a disaster is a socially constructed event. The earth's going to shake, and earthquakes, we're going to have tsunamis, we're going to have some wildfire, but we've constructed disasters by the way we've built and by the way we've created rather brittle social structures, or in some cases, you know, the way we've dealt with it appropriately. But the idea is, since we created this, we can deconstruct that disaster risk also by being serious about it and building more resilience into our communities.
So, in other words, we can no longer say it's an act of God and just let it go. We have that responsibility because we have participated in constructing this risk. So, a new way of thinking, or maybe it's an old way of thinking, is looking at a framework for relationships and a system thinking that focuses around a relationship as the focal point, as your connector to whatever, and looking for patterns and change. And that's a systems thinking approach in a nutshell. We covered that kind of theory at length the other day. But it really boils down to the fact that we can be empowered because it's about you, it's about your relationship with others and what you do within that space of your relationship. And how you are connected to others and how others are connected to others forms a network. And we can now measure that and really understand it better and why it works. And part of why it works is that the whole of us working together is more than the sum of the parts. So all of us in this room working together on Dish Team has an effect that is larger than each one of us individually. ACOF uses the car as an example, and all those parts do not make a vehicle for mobility on their own. It's when they are put together in a certain way for a unity of effort and built together to work as a whole that you have the product. So it just reframes how we perceive our own, we might be one of these parts in the car, but by ourselves, we can't, we feel disempowered that we can't do anything, but when we are doing something in unity with others, that's when something great can happen.
Sure.
So we look at governance. If we look at complex adaptive systems as helping us understand, and we went through some of this theory to try to break it down into components, but all that feeds together in how we actually govern and how we manage our collective lives with authority and influence. The big point for us in governance, it's not government, just government. It is government, but it's also the homeowners association, the church, the synagogue, the school, all these different ways that we organize our collective lives, and all that fits together in networks and layers of networks, and they all interact, in pretty incredible ways. Right now out there, we're functioning reasonably well, we're fixing major problems, it's that interaction between all these layers of governance that really is a trick to understanding this. We talked about Eleanor Ostrom and communities of interest. And we're privileged to have one of her researchers with us and really understood the depth of the work that was going on there. But Eleanor Ostrom did phenomenal work. 2009 Nobel Prize winner in economics. But she looked at communities of interest and their ability to manage common pool resources. Well over 4,000 case studies.
What's common pool resource?
Okay, we get that. Well over 4,000 case studies of communities all around the world and how they would, once they defined well what their community of interest was, what was a reasonable boundary for that community where they had commonality, how could they manage common pool resources, things that were very important for the functioning of that community. And Ostrom, through her work, proved definitively that communities, no matter if they're poor communities, very wealthy, educated communities, didn't matter. There was a human capability of being able to manage these common pool resources. As long as we put the correct requirements there. And we looked at a few of those. One of the big ones being, you didn't have undue influence from upper levels of government, but you were allowed to do what you needed to do to manage those things that were important to your community. But we identified 8 things, and we could look at that work later if need be, or we could reference you to some of that work if you need to. If you ever have a chance, look at her Nobel Prize acceptance speech from 2009. Absolutely beautiful, humble piece of work. But she looks like she showed up to win the prize, everybody's in their tuxedos, and she looks like she was getting ready to make a pie or something. and just speaking wonderfully about her excitement over this research. And this really a very fundamental discovery that we can do quite well in managing, all the way down at the community level, we can manage these very difficult problems.
So we brought all those theories, because there's nothing so practical as a good theory, to say that we have some incredible opportunities as people of faith working together. We identified with the changes that the internet brought to our society, the information communications technology, that our processes and systems have changed globally and locally because we are now vertically integrated, not only vertically integrated like our governments up and down hierarchical, but we are now connected with each other more than ever before across the world. We have resources. We have individual empowerment because of mass technology. We are able to get our thoughts out there, our experiences out there, and support each other. So mass self-communication is tremendously empowering for all of us. And even if you're not a participant in that, it has changed the way the structure is. And we have a number of young people in the room who it's second nature to them, and they already know this, they've been studying it, and that's why they're here, they're helping us to understand how to make some changes as well. And then it goes across sectors. But the opportunity is that these requirements, these things that are in place, are also seen in the church, and we can use our faith-based organizations as a vehicle, and us as individuals and our relationships within those organizations to start making a change for greater justice.
Yeah, and just to quickly look at that, I mean, in some of the larger denominations, in most faiths, actually, we are vertically integrated from the community all the way up to international levels, again, parallel to what's going on within governments generally. Horizontally linked, you know, sometimes communities are pretty good at coming together across faiths. Sometimes we're not, but the possibility remains that we can link arms as we tackle some of these issues. Communications power, you know, we have a convening power and ability to get ideas out there, to circulate ideas really quickly. And of course, all walks of life, you know, from a person that's living on the street to well-established folks and all different types of disciplines are present in our church and ready to be called on to help us figure out some of these things. And of course, the unity of love, and really across faiths that we have this incredible resource.
So that's the recap briefly. So now we're going to open with an exercise of if you could divide into three groups and really talk about the ideas and possibilities of the things that give you hope, identify the themes. There's a number of people here who have really good examples of what they are doing or their church is doing or a community group that they're participating in is doing. So those examples can really be helpful in identifying those themes.
Yeah.
I would ask one thing though, as we're dividing into groups, if Kirsten, Emma, and Elliot could each be in a different group. So each group has a young person's perspective and the things that you've been learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good idea. Yeah, and just self-organize, divide as you see fit.
Here today,
yeah.
You see?
Yeah. People have been around all week, if you could spread out amongst the groups also. What we really want to do is, just as a two-step thing, if you don't mind, first is just sharing examples, things that have worked really well. We've had great discussions about things that have worked really well. But also, where are the possibilities? Where do you think some things might be able to work? So just getting those ideas down on paper and some stories would be helpful.
We'll give you 5 minutes.
10 minutes, maybe.
10 minutes. Come up with the themes.
Yeah, if you don't mind doing that first, you know, identifying where these possibilities are. And then, if you look back at them once you've gone through all that and see if there's some themes that run through those. And I'm not sure what those themes might look like, but they might become evident after you've looked at 6 or 8 or 10 different things. Please.
So is a theme like a process or is it an outcome?
A theme would be something that you find common. You know, for example, you may see deeper engagement of church leadership. Or, you know, they had good cookies, or, you know.
Okay.
What, or you know, that you've lost all the youth, and then that becomes a theme. Or that the possibilities or new ways have been developed, and you gain more youth involvement.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So those are themes. But look at your examples and ideas and possibilities first, and then see, as you're looking at your list, and you can each grab one of these tablets,
yeah.
So each group can have a tablet and write it down.
Yeah, and what we'd like to do, with, again, in a two-step thing, is that you found some of these possibilities, and as you go through them, just jot them all down, just a key word to remind yourself, and then when we come back together as a group, share a couple of things that you found that were really good, that'd be worth sharing with a bigger group. But we really want to look at those themes also. So if you've identified a number of themes, things that seem to be working across examples, and then we share that with the bigger group, we might be able to get some interesting ideas out there. I am not sure exactly where that's all going to go, but that's what's interesting about all of them.
I want to make sure we focus here. So you talk about systems thinking, you talk about disasters. So from a systems thinking, yeah, relationship perspective, so these are themes related to our church. from a communication network perspective, or is this beyond that?
Yeah, it's beyond that. Think ways in which you come together as a church.
As a church.
Well, the ways that give you hope from your church or from what you've learned this week, or
okay,
it can be wide range. What gives you hope?
Okay,
right now. Thank you.
And what are some of the ideas from that hope?
Right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
What examples in your world do you see that are hopeful?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Do you want the easels, or do you want to just take the tablet to your group?
Tablet. Okay.
Where's our three leaders? Okay. Who are they?
Well, morning here. And so I would like you to transition from ideas and possibilities and examples to what are the main themes that are arising. But if you've been theming along, keep doing what you're doing.
There's diversity in kids, diversity in young people.
Well, these are some great conversations. Why don't we try to wrap it up in the next minute or two, but then we're going to come together and share with each other what you're learning. We're going to have a discussion, obviously, but find somebody that can report out to your group the themes that you've identified that may be
a key story. I think Scribe or the reporter.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So, this group looks ready. Who's the spokesperson?
So we're actually going to start with the themes and then go to the examples. So a couple of themes that came out was the theme of interconnectedness in ministry, and we'll go through some examples and you'll see that later. The other one is inclusivity. We see some hopefulness in that area of people attempting to become more inclusive in mindset and also in action. And then thirdly, this kind of vertical and horizontal involvement, the intersection of local and global involvement. In other words, the notion that sometimes starting from a grassroots movement can help to create a larger change. And sometimes it can go the other way, that there is some sort of legislation that happens, and then we start working on it in the grassroots. So there's an interconnectedness there. So those are three themes that we came up with. And here are some specific examples of things that give us hope in our own parishes and churches and communities. One is that the internet allows people to connect around shared values and goals. There's a lot of power in that. The other is that organizations, and the example was Habitat for Humanity, can bring people together of different faith, ethnicities, etc., in tangible work that shows results. And the theme there was people working together on something that's really very physical can actually kind of break down barriers of just belief and whatever. So, and the idea of tangible work that shows results can be very uplifting. There's an interconnectedness piece that's going on there, as well as inclusivity.
And if I may, the interesting thing about that, Habitat is worldwide. Yeah,
it is worldwide, yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Exactly. And then this is something that's actually happened in our church as well, the idea of churches that are providing sanctuary for people who are in fear of deportation. And, this... just the process of doing this has, forced churches to take a stand. But then also in the process of doing that, there's been an interconnectedness that has happened between the folks that are being receiving sanctuary and those who are helping to provide it. And then hopefully that will inform legislation in the future. So that kind of cycle. And then finally, we have great hope for the youth of the future. Just wishing that they can hurry up and get old enough to vote. With their idealism, courage, and engagement in public processes, like none that we've really seen for quite a while. And issues around global warming, the kids at Parkland, for gun control. So we see great, we see hope for the future
Tell us a little bit more about that. What about the youth? Some more detail.
What gets your help?
People, please, if I'm speaking for you in a way that you're not.
You're doing beautiful.
Well, just the fact that they're actually being very brave at this point. I'm willing to take a stand.
They're
walking out of school. Yep. They're
on mass nationally.
They're lobbying.
Right. Yep. And they're very persistent. They're not giving up. They're pointing their fingers at us and saying, you know, we've got to live in this world. And what are you doing to, you know, you're creating a mess that we're going to have to deal with. And they're actually, they're very eloquent about it and very direct.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what has captured the attention of our nation.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to add something to that. Mm-hmm. When you're in a small group working with kind of a diverse group as far as age is concerned, I think older folks like myself tend to talk a lot. But the emphasis from a younger person is action.
Yeah.
And you really feel that, and you feel their energy, and that pumps you up. It pumps me up like nobody's business when I feel that energy. So,
any other comments from the group or around this idea of youth and what's going on there?
And this is sort of cross national, the protesting of what's happening with our environment. I mean, school children in Germany are walking out of class. Mm-hmm. So
they started.
It's not just our states.
Yeah. Started with the young Swedish girl. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yep. They started there.
Thomas Kuhn talks about paradigm shifts, and it says when we have a complete change in the way we view things, you know, a shift from Newtonian physics to quantum physics, you know, this sort of thing. And he wrote a very interesting thing after studying paradigm shifts, and he said, you don't get a shift by educating everybody that's around right now and in power, and they don't change their mind, but you get it by educating the people that are coming in. And pretty soon all of us are gone anyway, you know, those older folks, you know, and it's theirs. And that's when you really get the shift. But I think it gives me great hope, too, when I see the energy and the enthusiasm and the dedication amongst younger people these days.
But also, to not just put, as older folks need to re-envision our role as representing some of the knowledge that existed before them.
And
mentor them. We need to really be involved and not segregated. I don't know that a lot of us learned much from our parents because that was kind of an odd generation, but I learned a lot from our grandparents. And they were part of the great generation. And some of what I see with the hope of the youth is that they may be the next great generation, and I would be thrilled to be a vessel that transmitted knowledge from the last great generation to the next great generation.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll pick up more in discussions, but yeah, how do we create that space? How do we do this well? How do we hand the baton off well? Because we're not particularly good at that in our society right now, but it's something historically we've been reasonable at.
Let's listen to this next
one. There was one more comment over here. Oh,
very quickly, Eric Lott, who's done a lot of race stuff, talks about holy currencies. And we might have space, we might have money, time, relationships, things in congregations. There are various currencies, and every congregation has currencies. But here it's one of the things I hear you saying, the young people have a different vision and energy and commitment and courage, but we need to remember that we have gifts to bring also. We're not without contribution. For a lot of older people like my husband and me, some of that's going to be money.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot necessarily. But some of it is going to be hospitality,
mm-hmm.
some of it's mentoring, but we still have a great deal to give. We're not checked out yet.
Exactly.
We're still active contributing mm-hmm. persons, but perhaps not in the same way.
But
we have different gifts.
There are plenty that have checked out, that's the problem. But yeah.
Yeah. No, point really well taken. I think being much more intentional about what that transition looks like and how we can make that really good for the time in history that we're at.
And give what we can give.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks.
Next.
So we kind of have a lot. I'll just kind of start with our themes. We had general themes of youth engagement, kind of the people involved in the transformation for them and kind of learning and the impact that they get from those experiences, lived experiences. Inclusivity and more diversity in organizations and just in their community, and then engagement and kind of the awareness that there needs to be a system change. Yeah, and then, so there's a lot of examples. We had a lot of church examples in the church with the church leaders bringing in people to go on missions and just engaging them to be more involved. So like more youth opportunities. And then, I don't know, what were some more examples?
More inclusivity and diversity in our institutions, like higher education and academia.
Yeah. Your example with the political action you did.
There's some more political action groups, like for example, I did Kids for Boundary Waters. And there was a specific example of a business and a nonprofit, like a more private business and a nonprofit working together to kind of use each other to benefit by putting a bakery somewhere. Where was it that they put the bakery? In Haiti. And so they both benefited from putting the bakery in Haiti. The people in Haiti were able to have jobs in the bakery, and the business kind of got some good reputation from having that business in Haiti. So it was kind of a good partnership and change in that. So anything more to add?
Talk about how many kids went to the Boundary Waters.
Yeah, your group went to Washington, you said. What was that about?
I was part of a youth group that went to Washington and lobbied for the Boundary Waters. And so that's a very big youth involvement and kind of fighting for what we wanted. But a big theme in that is none of that would have been able to happen without good mentors and a good path set by the generation in power now. It's very important that your, like what was said before, that this generation in power uses their power to encourage the youth and help them kind of raise up. That's a good.
And was that Boundary Waters not just going there and enjoying, but the ecological, or was it
so
environment?
We went to DC to talk to representatives about this mine that is threatening the environment and the economics of the Boundary Water.
I think your emphasis was the youth in the first part there, but you know, the idea of mentorship as you've talked about, and the fact that we still have a lot to give, you know, as old folks. But you think about when we were kids, right? You know, what youth have are the idealism and the energy, right? And that's the beauty that will always be there, and we have to leverage that. And so our leadership, as being an older, we talked about really trying to more explicitly get things for the youth to be involved in. It seems like we have more of that right now. You know, our church, we're trying to do that. And we have a group from our church right now who are down in Puerto Rico. And we have about 20, 25 high school youth there. And was brought up, you know, yeah, it's a great experience, but the real beauty of it is they come back changed. Right? And so it's an impact there for the week or two after that. But that experience has changed them. It's just like when you've gone in something like that, you've worked at camp or whatever your experience is, you come back different. And so providing, explicitly providing those kinds of opportunities to engage that idealism and enthusiasm and energy is really important.
Right.
But it does take both that youth and our mentorship to move forward.
Yeah. I guess I was just going to highlight one other thing on our list, and that was I'm hopeful, and we were hopeful, in the awareness of the necessity of the move from charity to justice.
Okay.
And that justice, there's a perfect example is Verlon's talk the other night on racism. I mean, it's not changing individuals about how they look at the person when they see the black person. It's changing the systems that, you know, are rigging, the things that rig the system. And so the awareness that there's a greater awareness of working towards justice and changing systems, and that's often through policy and advocacy, rather than just trying to fix, you know, the charity issue, you know, giving the person the fish who's hungry rather than the fishing pole, you know, that'll
Yeah, we use an example in our church. We give away 22% to benevolence, and we have a very strong, what they call social concerns ministry. Well, they have a budget of $160,000. They give a certain amount to the Oregon Synod, but they have $85,000-$90,000 that they give to different groups in nonprofits in the area. What we've been focusing on, what that group has been focusing on the last few years is, well, great, that's a nice charity, but what are you doing to get engaged in that group that you're trying to give money to, right? So people bring and say, hey, this group needs finances, okay, but you know, it's more the social justice impact, right? Going out there, that's the engagement part. Get out there and be with that group that you are trying to help finance. And so those specific efforts to say, yeah, go out there and be part of that, is something I think we're doing okay, but we can do more as a church to really engage people in doing that as well as a charity partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the old idea, you know, do we invest in the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff or the fence up at the top of the cliff?
Yeah.
And I suppose right now we've got to do both.
Right.
But the fence is certainly a lot more effective and better use.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And going off that point of the charity versus justice or empowerment model, going into a global fellowship right now, a lot of what we've been talking about in preparation of this fellowship is the people who we're working with are equals to us. They have resources and knowledge and intellect that we do not, and so it's more of a partnership. And a lot of our global engagement through my university kind of focuses on that, of we're going to work together to make this business better rather than we're going to come and give you a finite resource and then leave, and that resource runs out and you're left with the same thing. So that ties into one of our first themes of hope is education and this kind of paradigm shift in our change of thinking and approach to cross-cultural collaboration. We also talked about intergenerational and intercongregational collaboration that has us connecting with people who we might not normally. And I think there's so much strength in diversity, as we have seen. And while it can be challenging or uncomfortable at first, out of that discomfort grows something so beautiful. So investing in that discomfort. A few specific points that we talked about. I spoke about our congregation and how the whole congregation has rallied together to host refugee families, whether that's giving, say, a pair of socks or a ride to a doctor's appointment or a role of cultural brokerage between these families who are coming in. Right now, with the current political administration, we haven't been able to get a family because there's not a lot of refugees. Which is really hard because we're ready and there's all these people that need a spot. We also talked about the Parable of the Talents project. I don't know, would you like me to speak about that?
I can just, our church, our pastor's husband's church did it in South Minneapolis, and they gave their congregation $10,000 to try to generate more money, just like the parable of talents.
Cool cash.
For a cost. Cool cash. So our church did the same thing. Our foundation provided $10,000 in ones and fives and tens and even up to $100. You got an envelope, and this was for kids as well. So with youth all the way up to retired adults. And the goal again was to multiply that money. And we did. We got $50,000 raised, which was to help build us a dentist with our Tanzanian sister church in Tanzania. So they had a huge return on that, and the people actually took the money over there because we have some members who go there, and as I was saying, some of their members do come to our church every other year as well, so there's a good interrelation between the two countries and, you know, also the generations of this, and it was an amazing little thing.
Mm. So it would be neat in the future is to invest in the education of dentists in Tanzania.
Yeah, yep. Which is something.
So, yeah, because a lot of the people who have the education in those limited resource countries are leaving for better opportunities.
Yeah,
and so that's an important thing. We talked about wills and how churches are often hesitant to reach out for being written into wills and how that can be a good source of income for these different projects and connections. We talked about day ministries for homeless women and how collaborative those can be, and really taking care of people and really just being rooted in love, and how at the end of the day we can get caught up in the minutiae of the tasks, but if you're rooted in this love and the mission together, things are very accomplishable. Any other points?
Thank you. Yeah, you have a question over here?
Yes.
I just wanted to raise something about refugee resettlement.
Yes.
One thing that maybe we overlook at times, because of the way they've cut back on the number of refugees we allow in the country, the organizations that have done so well with this over the years, like the International Rescue Committee, they're not going to be able to continue because they won't have money to do that. They won't have people to serve. They won't be able to generate the funds to do that. We're going to lose that expertise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have 60 million refugees in the world right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unprecedented numbers.
Yeah.
And we won't let them in our country because we're full.
Yeah. Yeah, we're full.
Get how big our country is.
Yeah.
That's a good point. You don't think about that. It's going to dry up here, even though there's going to be a huge need, and it's going to continue, regardless of our president and what happens in the future.
Right. It's only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. So we have to start over. You have to rebuild.
And that costs more money.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, that institutional knowledge is really important to pass on to our young people.
Yeah.
So we're seeing some interesting crossover and themes between the three groups. Mm-hmm. Certainly, youth engagement figures prominently in there. Maybe it's because we seated each of the groups. I don't know, but that really is where the hope is right now. And being very intentional about how we create those transitional structures so that the wisdom and the resource and everything in the older part of the church is passed on graciously to the younger part of the church and with full intention and being smart about it, you know, so we're doing this really well and appropriate for the times that we live in. And I keep hearing engagement, too, deep engagement, you know, getting our hands dirty. That's where things are really making a difference. And of course, that's where we learn, too. One of the things that we've found along the way is we have these opportunities for engagement, you know, trips to El Salvador or, you know, the border down in Mexico or whatever it is, but we don't make the full use of the learning that comes from that, and we're not particularly good yet how we transition into other things. So, and of course, rooted in love, yeah, thank you for your comments on that. You know, the power of love is, we haven't even begun to tap, I think, what's there. But what are the other cross-cutting themes that you saw that might be worth highlighting?
You know, it was said in different ways in a number of groups, but a simple way to say it is before we engage in this work, we have to listen. We have to listen to the people we intend to serve. We have to know what it is that they feel is their need and respond from that information.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Classic bottom-up.
Yeah.
Important themes. I am personally encouraged by all of these themes that have emerged and the actions that are underway. because we hear so much negative and we feel so disempowered. And what I want you to take away from not only this exercise, but from the grounding theories that we were presenting earlier, is that we are empowered. God has given us the power to do this. And it's all about relationships. And there's some wonderful examples about relationship building and making a difference. So these are great examples to take into your day-to-day life. And we've actually managed, without instruction, to blend the second exercise into this one, so we're ahead of the curve. Just to remind ourselves from the previous days that, okay, this picture is an electron path from the electronic accelerator, but it's often referred to, its nickname is the fingerprint of God, and it's a feedback loop. And so the design principles for our future social institutions needs to be consistent with the principles of organization that nature has evolved to sustain the web of life. And that's a quote from Richard Capra, a physicist turned sociologist. But that translation is also that we can pattern our behaviors to this. And this is the pattern God's given us. And we should use those relationships and the feedback and improve continual improvement because of the things we learn from each other and the feedback we get from each other.
Of course, we talked a lot about that in complex adaptive systems and some of the theories that undergird those social structures.
So as we look to build future and improved resilience in our communities that we live and work in, we're not just looking future, but, you know, this is built on past, not just knowledge, but past, oh, I lost my words this morning. Past accepted wisdom. Communities can be seen as complex adaptive systems. And the Bible and the Old Testament refers to the church as leaven. We are the leaven that causes, it just takes a little bit to make the bread dough rise and make a nice, fluffy, whole thing instead of a flat, hard, brittle thing.
I love the previous, when you're talking about systems and how, you know, they're all connected, and it looks like a spider web.
Yes.
And I believe that's it's the role of us as Christians and as working for non-for-profits and for congregations. I think it's our role to pull on that spider web and see what happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think some of that's coming out, you know, with the discussions this morning about engagement.
Yeah.
So you go out there and you give it a try, you give it a bash. You do as best you can. You understand how you're going to influence things. But you go and you see what difference you made in that big system. And then you adjust, and then you adjust
exactly.
again. And,
exactly.
and that's life in a dynamic system.
And that's the feedback loop.
Yeah.
But also that interconnectivity with the other side of the web.
Yep.
And like this woman over here was talking about her knitting and finding a community of interest on the internet where they could collaborate together and their knitting goes to serve for social good. Where they donate to specific communities
yeah.
in internationally that we target as enemies and tell them, no, we still love you, we don't hate you. And then your community connecting with a sister church in Africa, in Tanzania, that's a really important connection to feedback back and forth so you can help each other. Those are great examples of becoming a complex adaptive system. Also another example in the Bible and the Old Testament, the church as salt and light. Salt used to be a preservative, still can be. It also kills bacteria in wounds. So salt is a very important item. And so we are there as a preservative, destroying the rot that that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So part of our process is in that, and then light does the same thing. Light can destroy bacteria. You can put your clothing out in the sunshine and all the bacteria that was growing in it can be destroyed, that kind of thing. So we can work within the processes of governance and policy so that we bring that preservative, we bring that flavoring, we bring that healing.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen the negative of that when the church has considered itself holier and withdrawn, and how communities can really suffer when we pulled ourselves out.
So I have a question for you about what you just said, Steve, like, and Shirley too, like, because some churches would see salt and light in a different way in terms of governance and policy, and so that might not be what way so much of is healing the rot.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know very much about Christian theology, but the whole notion of the rapture, for example, and that you're in the here and now, and so because the rapture is coming, you need to take care of the here and now, not so much about the seventh generation. I don't know, I'm just trying to, because governance and policy would be a different, would look different for different
churches. And beliefs.
Yeah, and beliefs.
It's true. Yeah.
We might be on the verge of a new reformation, you know, at least as we think about a lot of these things. And maybe this is good, you know. We were talking a lot about the decline in the Catholic Church and the need for deeper engagement. And we're certainly seeing that across a lot of the Protestant denominations with people leaving in droves. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this kind of prosperity gospel. We've seen this gospel that focuses on, you know, rapture in it, but ignores our role here and now in servant of God and mercy and justice.
Yeah.
And we've lost our idea as stewards, you know, they're accountable here and now for what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's the idea of the kingdom of God being present here, but not in its fullness. But we need to be engaged here, right now. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't understand with precision what's going to happen to me after I die. All I know is what I'm supposed to be doing today. And I frankly don't understand this theology that has just taken our responsibility and shifted it to some other worldly kind of thing instead of love and justice here in front of us.
Mm-hmm. I don't either.
Yeah.
I heard a speaker on NPR, and I think I remember most of it. It was the guy talking to the rich people over in Basel, Switzerland. And he was I think, a Seattle guy or something. But he was saying if he gave $1 million to build a homeless shelter in Seattle, he'd get all kinds of kudos and attaboys. Mm. But he gave the same $1 million to effect change at the governmental level, lobbying for a more comprehensive solution to homelessness, boom, thumbs down. Yeah. And it's just the most curious way of switching charity into something bigger.
Yeah.
And he was so right. And he's trying to tell these rich guys over in Basel, give your money to change the fundamental system. And it's falling flat. And it bothers me as a church. It's threatening. And it bothers me as a church, too, because we're officially not supposed to be lobbying at the church level, but then that's what we're talking about here, justice, not charity. And I'm kind of torn.
Yeah, well, here we are. We're a good company in the past, you know. Joseph, Daniel, scores of other people across the millennium involved in deep levels and bringing about transitions in government and doing the right thing, you know. So using those systems to bring love into our communities. So,
and we have to really remind ourselves that governance is the collective way we organize ourselves, how we take care of each other.
Mm-hmm. Not just government.
Yeah. Government.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're saying, though, that, going back, you're saying that the engagement should be at the state level as well as at the non-state level,
mm-hmm.
right? And so engagement can take place among communities and among what we do outside of what we consider government, right?
Or church, maybe.
Right, or church, right? So engagement in both. You know, so is there a separation of church and state? And, you know, until you get into this, all right? Mm-hmm. Should we be policymakers, right? Should we be talking about who we should vote for? I mean, and so there's a fine line there, right? Mm-hmm. Some people say, oh, you got to have social justice, you got to be out there, you got to be in the government's face, the church should lead that, you should change the policies in the government level. Some people don't believe that. Mm-hmm. Others say it's a critical part of what they do.
Right. Yeah.
And yet we don't, the engagement can be at that level, or it can be at the network level, be outside of the government.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that?
All of the above. Yeah. I have no problem being engaged.
I do want to say that for such specific times, you know, God put his people in a specific place, Joseph, for example, to save people from famine. So there are specific times God appoints some of his people to do that.
Well, it's but you can say that, okay, it's a church.
If we're talking about governance, right, and how we organize ourselves in our day-to-day lives, in our communities, in the people that we are related to, and the people who live amongst us, we don't have to be in government. We can affect how things are done at our own, in our own communities, because of who we are and where we are.
Well, how do you answer the question? The church should feed the poor, not the state.
Say again?
The church should feed the poor and not the state, right? It's the church's responsibility. You heard that,
yeah,
right? It's not the responsibility of the state to feed the poor. The churches should reach out and feed the poor. I mean, that's a common argument.
Yeah.
Where do you hear that?
Oh,
but we remember we are a democracy, and democracy is of the people and by the people and for the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to pay attention.
But there was that separation of church and state because historically in Europe, the church told the state what to do, and they didn't want that.
They
wanted the people to have a voice. So we as God's people involved in our communities have to be the salt and light.
Right. Yeah. Well, it, once again, it comes back to this ambulance at the bottom and fence at the top of the cliff. And yeah, if we could help and influence the structures that are going to cause, you know, so much more suffering and use that to our influence on government, that's probably a good thing.
Just pointing out some of the challenges.
Were a great segue to our final conversation about barriers, so you brought up an important barrier. And we had a few other comments here, there.
I was just going to take a stab at that church and state thing. I mean, the church and state is not about the individual. I mean, I think if you're a religious person, you have a spirituality, that's part of you. Yeah, you can't separate that from what you think you should be advocating for. And you have the right to do that. It's for example, in our church, there's always the discussion in the Catholic Church about, you know, bringing prayer into the classroom. The law is everybody's free to pray anywhere they want. Mm-hmm. It's just that teachers can't organize prayer, okay? And I think that shows the difference between where the state can go and where the individuals and where you can go. So if kids want to get together and play around and pray around the flagpole, you know, together, they have the power and they have the right to do that. Now, if a teacher comes and says to them, we're going to all pray today, you know, and in my church, you know, the guys, you know, I'm in a men's Catholic group and it tends to be a little conservative, and they think that should happen. Okay. Mm. They think that, you know, we should bring prayer to the class in public schools. Mm-hmm. But then I ask them, what if the teacher is an Islamic teacher and he wants to teach, you know, the Quran? Oh no, you can't do that. We're a Christian nation. So I mean, that's, I think, where the difference. I mean, it's showing the difference between church and state. The state can't push it. We're not a state church. That's where it came out of. All these churches were state churches in England. You had to go to church, you know, or you would be against, it was against the law not to go to church.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, please.
I think we'd all be wise to remember the Chinese adage, may you get the government you deserve.
Yeah.
And I think we deserve a whole lot of what we've got.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. What are the other barriers? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have a foot in both those worlds. I just retired as a public school teacher. And I'm also a Lutheran deaconess. And so it's been a little odd. But I did years of youth and education stuff in parishes and other church-related jobs. It has amazed me how committed I am to public schools as genuine public for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I negotiate fights about theology sometimes. No, Halloween is not the devil's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of nonsense. But
yeah.
It gets a little odd. But I really want a public space, like a public library, where everybody's welcome and equally valued, and no one religious group is privileged. It was a great day for me when the Jewish kid and the Muslim kid became best buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had been super public about my religious faith, that probably wouldn't have happened in the same way. So there are advantages to the church to being disestablished, to being one player in the larger society, but not dominant. There are advantages of authenticity for the church, I would argue.
Thank you for that.
Well, about 20 years ago, perhaps, here at Holden, you know, we have our evening forums sometimes where people present different points of view, and the topic was how to get good Holden types to go into politics, you know, good Lutherans. And it was very interesting, and people were, because there were a couple politicians at Holden that time, and they were talking, and then one of the speakers for the week, who was not a Lutheran, who was a real active Quaker, and he was a real kind of forceful type person, he was on the panel too, and he said, what positive social movement has ever come from politicians? It's always come from the people and their movements, and then the politicians hang on because they want or attach themselves to it. But, you know, in other words, we don't have to, or we shouldn't, not that we shouldn't worry about who our politicians are and what their values are, but the real power is going to come from us moving upward.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's
Thank you.
Mostly
that was...
true, but Wilberforce would be another example yeah. of somebody who created the anti-slavery movement. And,
yep.
But it was just such an interesting perspective.
It is.
It is.
And it's so empowering at the same time also, you know, that yeah. we can have that kind of influence and they're going to pay attention.
And that is actually a key point of this whole week, is I want each of you to understand how you're connected to that network and be empowered to continue bring salt and light and love and to bring greater justice. Do we have any other barriers? I know we're late for lunch.
Oh,
yeah.
No barriers.
Do we have no barriers? Any other barriers we should discuss today? We've got lots of barriers.
I think we really are living in a time where the barriers are so huge seemingly now because they're so public and virile. And so the barriers thing is what we hear all the time, daily.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the hopeful things. And I need to tell you a hopeful thing that you said last session. So the whole environmental movement, you know, seeing deregulations gone, air quality, you know, the name it. Okay, what's happening here right now. Very powerful stuff, very definitive, coming down very quickly, and discouraging. And then you said, but there is so much going on internationally. And we were like, yeah, where? And it was you mentioning the NGOs and these guys getting together over in Europe. And then you said, oh, and then the CEOs. And that gave me hope, because too often we've taken the big corporations and put them in the bad side of things. And there's a lot of evil, maybe, but to hear that they have vision, they're seeing the future better than our politicians right now, and engaging in that was something I'm not hearing.
Yeah.
And I thank you for that.
Okay, and maybe this is a place to wind up our discussion. Also, a fantastic discussion. Really enjoyed it, and I've learned an awful lot. Thank you for that. But the idea that CEOs, corporations, are very accountable organizations, And it's a lot harder for them to get away with the nonsense now that they had in the past, because there's just a whole lot more scrutiny. And they have to pay attention to their shareholders, they have to pay attention to their customers, their resources, their supply chains, everything else. And there's a different level of accountability in the past. And to your point also, the same with politicians. We can speak out, we can shine light as a church on all these problems that are in front of us, and we can speak out, and we can speak out about it intelligently, and we can testify before Congress, we can run for office, we can do all kinds of things, but we can influence this political system by being out there and holding them accountable to our views, which is serving in God and mercy and justice, and we want to honor that and give real substance to that. And that's going to be better for everybody in the long haul. It turns out that might be better for the company, that's trying to do things in the long haul, to do things correctly. And it might be a whole lot better for the politicians that want to be around for a generation and all that. And it comes back.
Go ahead. I think there was also a great example of one public NGO partnership to do something that benefited the private partner. I said private partner instead of public.
It was a private company.
It was a private company partnering with an NGO.
In Haiti.
And it was a benefit to them economically because they appeared to be doing good. Mm-hmm. And that was a good PR boost as well as them actually doing good. So there is a lot of that happening.
Yeah.
And we just need to be
what
aware
about
tap into that.
Rio Tinto.
And Rio Tinto is a great example.
I was thinking of.
And this remediation project cost them a lot of money, but they are gaining it back as being the ecological mining company, and they're going to benefit from it in the future.
And they see that as a way of being able to replicate this sort of process, have these kind of benefits in communities around the world. And that's only going to help people. But bottom line,
but as individuals, as churches, or as community groups, you can tap into that kind of partnership as well.
Yeah.
So that is a great idea.
Yeah. Bottom line is, our future has got all kinds of shocks, likely unpredictable things, and we can anticipate some of the problems, but we have no idea what kind of black swans are lurking out there over the horizon. But making our systems and institutions robust enough to withstand a variety of shocks is the way the new history will work. This is a quote from Ball, and it was kind of an obscure article in Scientific American, but I thought it was really a very important point, and particularly as we consider our role as a church, how can we start to get good at working within these systems to be able to influence companies, government, all these things that we use to organize our lives, and how can we build that adaptiveness into those systems so that we can withstand whatever is going to be on the horizon for us. And again, we do it because we serve a God of mercy and justice.
Amen.
Amen.
And I want you to be empowered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.